Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City, friends. Yep, here at NOLA Drinks. We don't claim attorney-client privilege. We're not attorneys. That's kind of how that works. You can't really do that if you're not an attorney, I think, or a client for that matter. We're not that either. So anyway, hey, we got a good show for you today, friends, as always. Interesting chat. We're kind of deviating from the drink and food theme, as we do from time to time, to the broader cultural theme here in New Orleans. And we chat right here after this segment with Vin Santos. And Vin Santos is a local artist and drag performer, and he runs a gallery called the Funeral Gallery on Royal Street, the 800 block, 811 Royal Street. Some really cool stuff that he does. And he also, we talk about this, but does a really neat thing, does a residency program, brings in, I believe, typically younger artists and give them a place to stay right there above the gallery and a place to display their work and expand their horizons. Very cool. And another thing that Vin Santos does is he is the head mistress, as he says, of the New Orleans Drag Workshop, which is a really neat organization that allows people, you know, and I think as we know, the drag performances and drag culture has been around in New Orleans for a very long time, but so much has broadened in not just in New Orleans, but in the world of drag, bringing in more of a performance art concept to it beyond lip syncing and some of these things that we maybe associate with it. And Vin Santos has been somebody who is very much at the forefront and responsible for this with the workshop in the city. So we talk with him about that stuff, also involved in the burlesque community, which is really cool. And yeah, there is a little bit of a food tie-in, an event that goes on that brings some of these performers together in a casual setting over at Mr. Gregory's Cafe, which is right there on North Rampart, right across from the Arch of Armstrong Park. So really fun conversation with him. Then we're going to talk a little bit about just do one little segment on the Dead and Company, you know, the Grateful Dead iteration, if you will, that was supposed to play Tuesday night. That didn't happen. My wife and I were supposed to go to that. That didn't happen. But it turned out to be a really fun evening nonetheless. Talk a little bit about some of that stuff. If there's a place where a show needs to get postponed or canceled, New Orleans is the best place for that because alternatives just are everywhere. And then what we're actually going to do, we are going to run an interview from the not-too-distant past with Toshio Ueno, who is a more or less the equivalent of a master sommelier of sake, which is, of course, a fermented rice beverage. Some people call it rice wine. It's made a little differently. It's actually more like a beer because it's brewed. But what we talk about here is another distillate, or a distillate, excuse me, in that family, if you will. And it really, it's not even in that family. It's a Japanese distillate called shochu. And it's something you've heard me talk about on the show before. And we did run this interview a few months ago. But Toshio is very interesting. And we talk about shochu. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it today here on the program, we're finally starting to see more of it on the market. Now, it is a distillate that can be made from rice, sweet potato, I believe one or two other things. We get into that in the interview, and sometimes they're blended together. Barley, excuse me. And they're blended together. Sometimes they're sort of the single grain that's used to make these, but it's a very clean alcohol. It doesn't necessarily pack a huge wallop of flavor, say you might expect from a bourbon or a rum or something like that, but it's certainly got a little more character than most vodkas do. Lots of times you get some floral notes, some earthy notes, these things. And one of the things I'm really interested in about it that we do touch on, but I bring up here, it's really fairly new on the market. We don't see a lot of it here in New Orleans. It's something that I had been exposed to along with sake going back quite a long time growing up in the San Francisco area because of the Japanese culture, the widespread Japanese culture. San Francisco had a Japantown. Don't really have that here in New Orleans, of course. And so, you know, it was always sort of around. And the vector, the method for sake and shochu being brought into the country, if you will, or being present somewhere, you know, that was brought by the Japanese culture. They brought it with them. Makes sense, right? And here, because we don't have as much of that going on, I find it very interesting. Shochu is finding its way into the market really because of bartenders and bars and stuff that are experimenting and cocktails. It makes a really good base for a cocktail, bring something to the table. It's not just sort of a neutral like a vodka, but it also can play really nicely with lots of things because it is not overly bold, as I guess is a word I'll use, as I mentioned. So I think it's really interesting to hear from Toshio. We taste through several examples. This was taped at Sylvain in late January as part of our Tales of the Cocktail feature, and pretty cool stuff. So that's just a short little two-segment interview there, and then we'll close things out. So that'll be pretty fun. Big football game going on tonight, friends. Of course, our New Orleans Saints are playing the Dirty Birds, our arch rival, the Atlanta Falcons, 97th meeting of that matchup. And, you know, I read somewhere that it's one of the underrated rivalries in the NFL. Okay, fair enough. Not for us and not in Atlanta. We know all about it. But in other circles, okay, yeah, you know, it's not the Cowboys Redskins or Cowboys Giants, because we don't like the Cowboys. We don't like the Cowboys. You know, it's not the Raiders Denver. It's not those sorts of things on the maybe the national stage. This is a big rivalry. And here's why, you know, it's a huge game. We're playing great. We've won 8 of the last 9 games. Let me stop there right there. For friends who are listening to this podcast in Atlanta, thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. Not trying to alienate you, but I hope you lose. Yep, we're going to bring it tonight. And the cool thing, hey, you know, after we beat Carolina on Sunday, that kept them a game behind us. That's good stuff. And we're sitting at 9-3, Carolina at 8-4, and Atlanta at 7-5. So here's the thing. We beat the Dirty Birds. We beat the Falcons tonight. Game's around 7:30 this evening, of course, NFL Network. And yeah, if we beat those guys tonight, then that's going to put them 3 games behind us. And that pretty much, you know, that's basically all she wrote for their chances to win the NFC South. The division puts us in a really good space with 3 games left to play after this evening. And then, yeah, you know, we still have to keep Carolina on the radar, I think, a little bit. But we swept them, so we have the tiebreaker with them if we end up with the same record. So that's pretty cool. And, yeah, you know, the thing is, Atlanta had been playing better. Of course, they lost to Minnesota over the weekend. But they're still definitely going to be in the hunt for the wild card for sure, along with kind of Seattle and Carolina right up in there. And then we've got some kind of also-rans, you know, Detroit, Green Bay sitting at 6-6, that sort of thing. But so we're not going to necessarily knock the Falcons out of playoff contention, but we could basically finish them in the NFC South tonight. So that should be a lot of fun. Friends, another great event that I mentioned last week, Luna Fet, is going on. That's a really wonderful multimedia projection show that goes on at Lafayette Square, and it was supposed to start last night and then run through Saturday, and it, because of the dreary weather, and I forgot to mention that at the top of the show, one word, dreary, for the weather right now. Stay dry, stay warm. They canceled it last night, but it's supposed to hopefully go on this evening, as far as I know it will. And then they, because it only was going to run for 4 days, they actually added Sunday, which is great. So you have a chance to go see it on Sunday. It goes from 6 to 10 p.m. The show's about, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14 minutes long, something like that. Then they take a break and then they run it again. It's really, really neat. The face of Gallier Hall is amazing. This one, of course, will celebrate and honor the upcoming, meaning next year, 300th, the tricentennial here of the Crescent City. So that'll be really cool. That's at Lafayette Square, taking place on Saturday, Pontchartrain Vineyards from 12 to 3 p.m. up there in Bush, just north of Covington, is the final event that they're having for the year, calendar year, their wine club release party. And yes, it's the wine club. If you're familiar with what those are, I won't explain that now. They can go do a food pairing. You can join the club, which is free to join when you go. But it's open to the public. There's going to be live music from Christian Surpass and George Nayre, who are the two guitar players from Ghost Town, Christian Surpass and Ghost Town. They're playing from 12:30 to 3, big wine sale going on, stuff like that. That will be a heck of a lot of fun. Some other things to talk about going on. Let's see. Also on Saturday in the evening, if you're looking for something to do really late afternoon, is the Running of the Santas, and that's always kind of a funny event. I kind of almost want to say it's a little different, but sort of think red dress run, but in the winter in Santa clothes. So trade in the red dress for the red coat and the red hat. And yeah, it starts at 3 o'clock there at Manning's, 517 Fulton Street, and that's going to be fun. It's a big outdoor party, lots of good music. Right about 5:45, and it's usually a little bit of a loose thing, the Santas will run or saunter, as they say, from Manning's to Generations Hall, and there's going to be a costume contest at 8 o'clock. A portion of the proceeds benefit the Others May Live Foundation, a very worthy cause. And then two bands playing, the Top Cats and Flow Tribe, great band, Flow Tribe, young guys up and coming. And that is at 6 p.m. at Generations Hall. So check that out. We'll get to a couple more events at the end of the show, friends. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back with Vin Santos. Come on back. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking.
American wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning into the show, friends. Yes, as you know, we are sitting here at the 800 block of Royal Street, and I am pleased to be joined by Vin Santos, who is the head Mr. S of the New Orleans Drag Workshop, and he's also everybody's favorite drag grandma. And we're going to talk a little bit about drag and burlesque, a little bit about art, because we're sitting here in Vin Santos's gallery. And welcome. Thank you for coming on the show.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Happy to have you.
Can you tell?
Yeah, I can tell. You had a rough day at City Hall.
I did. And now I'm back. You know, we're... You know, I went to rent some space in front of my gallery to rent some parking spots because we're having an opening this weekend and I want to line the street with hearses. The name of the gallery is Funeral Gallery, so right. It's just fitting. I want people to have something to see before they even get inside the gallery itself.
So, which I think is a great idea. I guess the first question then is, how did the permitting process work out for you, or do we know?
Permitting process was approved. It cost me a decent amount of money. But I have three or four hearses coming in from this group called the NOLA Hearse Club. And they love to take their hearses around to different cool events. You'll see them out like at House of Shock at the Haunted House every year.
Yeah.
They're just really proud of their rides, and their rides are really beautiful, and they open them up and let people explore them. And so I just thought it's like a really cute addition to an already fabulous show that we're going to be having.
So this is for an art opening that you have
this
coming
is for
up.
An art opening happening Saturday, December 9th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Funeral Gallery, 811 Royal Street.
Yeah, well, we have some time to get into some things, but tell us, since we're on it, are you the artist, or are there other artists coming
into
this?
Okay, so the gallery, Funeral Gallery, is a gallery that I operate on Royal Street in the French Quarter. We definitely specialize in stuff that's a little more on the dark side, dark and pretty. You can call it macabre.
There's always
like a kind of a sense of humor to most of it. But we have a residency program that we provide different artists from around the country. And currently we're working with Timothy Cummings. He's a fine art painter. He is an old friend of mine, but he's also very hard to get because he's represented by a gallery in San Francisco and New York, and has achieved the level of being pretty fancy in the art world.
In demand. Huh?
And they keep him real busy.
Is he based in San Francisco?
He's actually living in Albuquerque now, I know him back from San Francisco. And so we have this apartment a few blocks from here that's gorgeous. We have a two-story Creole Maisonette, and we never go upstairs. So this apartment just sits empty. It's really like a mausoleum. And we were just racking our brains trying to think of what to do with the place. And once I obtained the gallery on Royal Street, we thought like, wow, this would be a great place to house different artists and let them come in, live in New Orleans for as long as they need to, get inspired by the culture and see what kind of work that they could produce. based on that inspiration.
That's great. And you caught my attention with this. You and I met sort of just by happenstance on Thanksgiving Day, just
a couple
weeks ago at a bar, Bar Tonique, we'll name it, because I'm there all the time. And we got to talking about what it is that you do. And I thought that was really cool because you mentioned the fact that you do this sort of artist in residence consideration, which I think is what a great program.
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, people are always fascinated with New Orleans, you know, with its history, with its culture. So we thought, like, what better way than to bring different artists from all over that have different backgrounds and see how the culture here influences their work.
That's great. Now, you mentioned this, your connection with, you said Tim Cummings, is that correct?
Timothy Cummings
is from San Francisco. And as listeners to the show know, I grew up in that part of the world as well. So you grew up in San Francisco and you grew up in the Bay Area.
I did. I was born in Daly City at the top of the hill. And, you know, sadly enough, my parents went suburban on me when I was about two or three and moved us down to San Jose in the South Bay, which is like the cultural armpit of California.
Yeah, I grew up in Fremont. That's really the armpit.
So I really,
San Jose's in the middle.
I really suffered through it until I was old enough to, you know, get on BART. And then I just started spending all of my free time in San Francisco. And then when I was 17 and out of the house, I, you know, instantly moved there and started my adult life there.
Where in San Francisco did you move to?
I have lived everywhere in San Francisco except for like the business district.
Right.
I've lived in every corner of that place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting place. It's a conversation for another time that we'll
sure,
have.
Sure.
We'll reminisce over drinks.
No, San Francisco's all over. It's all about New Orleans.
Yeah, there you go. So you do some interesting stuff, Vincentos, in that aside from, so you have a gallery here that we talked about. We'll circle back on that too. But as I mentioned at the top of the segment, head mistress of the New Orleans Drag Academy.
Workshop. Yes. So,
workshop sounds a little bit more fun than academy.
Workshop really more connotates that it's a kind of an exchange of ideas as opposed to, you know, an academy where I would just tell everybody what to do.
Right.
So I call it a workshop to make it sound easier on everyone, but it really is all about doing what I tell you to do.
Right, fair enough. It's semantics, but
only if you want to succeed.
Right, there you go. You can do it my way. You can do it that way, or you can do it the right way.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
I got it.
I mean, I didn't start it for nothing. So,
let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
So, how does it work as a workshop, or we'll say academy, but workshop? How does it really work?
Well, you know, when I moved here about 8-9 years ago, I had been performing in the drag community in San Francisco since 1998.
Okay.
But my character was very avant-garde, kind of more of a gender bender than a female drag performer. And so when I moved here, I didn't really have a lot of venues to work within. And from there, I got more pushed into and picked up by like the burlesque community and the vaudeville community and the cabaret community.
Was that because it was more prevalent?
It was just easier for this character to work within a variety show and a variety group. And because the drag shows and drag clubs here were way more traditional than what I was used to. They have long lines, long lineages of drag families and a lot of history. And really focus a lot on the pageantry of drag and the pageant system and the court system, which is something that I had never even touched before. I came out of this group called Tranny Shack in San Francisco that started, you know, back in like, I think, 96 and went for 12 years every Tuesday night at midnight.
And where was that? What
that was at the Stud on Harrison Street.
Okay.
And so I really was just kind of felt out of place. You know, I would love to go to the drag shows, but there really wasn't just a venue for me to perform in. Around that time that I was getting really frustrated, I had met some younger kids that were exploring like the alternative side of drag, that is more gender bent and there's men and women involved and trans people. And it's such a huge mix of people and it's more based on performance art than your traditional man dresses as a woman drag.
Gotcha. And bringing in more, like you said, the variety show, the vaudeville.
The more variety and just an alternative aesthetic. So these kids had started a couple shows that I was more kind of in line with and used to, but the performances were just, I'll just say it, they were sloppy. It was like a bunch of, you know, children playing in a sandbox of drag. And
school talent show.
So even though I wanted this alternative drag culture, I just thought like, you know, what I don't want is a bunch of sloppy queens.
Right. Okay.
And so I approached this group, and a lot of them were my friends. I said, what do you think about putting a group of us together as, and workshopping our ideas and seeing if we can't become better performers? You know, I've been doing it for many, many years. I feel like I've picked up a lot of tips and tricks along the way, and I'm willing to share them. And so we put a group together, about 12 people, and it became really apparent that on the first day and the first meeting that it was going to be more than just about painting your face or styling a wig or putting an outfit together, that it was going to be like a transformative experience for everyone involved.
Great.
And especially myself. As I said, I was more of a avant-garde kind of gender-bent performer that was working in the guise of drag. And so I knew like the weird kids were going to show up for the workshop, but there was also other people that came in that said like, oh, I want to look like, you know, my inspiration is Christina Aguilera. And I had never touched lady drag before myself.
Okay.
So what I had to do is just lie and say, I got you. And then week by week, I would teach myself. Yeah, I would teach myself another aspect.
Right,
like
right,
I would like week one, I got to learn how to, you know, paint a cut crease and like, you know, and contour my face to look like a woman.
Right.
You know, week two, I got to figure out like how to wear some hair that's not just some weird balled up thing that I found on the street.
It's always the axiom of being the teacher. All you have to do is stay one lesson ahead of the student.
That was it. And it truly changed my career in the biggest way. You know, I had to teach myself how to make a body to transform myself from a male body to a female body, which is something I'd never done before.
Vin Santos, do me a favor. Hold that thought. We're going to take a quick little break here on the show. We're going to come right back. Friends, we're chatting with Vin Santos, and we're here at the 811 Royal Street here at his gallery. Come on back.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Louisiana Radio Network News, I'm Michelle Southern. North Louisiana is under a freeze warning, and the Florida parishes could see snow by the morning. Emily Gunn has more.
Meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Shreveport, Davian Hill, says they won't see much precipitation in the northern part of the state. He says they aren't anticipating icy roads, even with freezing temperatures.
Mid to upper 20s across the region. Should get some clearing out as we go throughout the day.
Alec Krautman with the NWS in Slidell says they've issued a winter weather advisory for the Florida parishes. He says it'll be in the 40s today with continuing rain, and temperatures will start to cool at night.
We believe there's the possibility of some very light accumulations on elevated surfaces.
I'm Emily Gunn.
More schools have announced closures for tomorrow. They include East Baton Rouge, St. James, St. Mary, West Feliciana, and Lafayette parishes. Ag Commissioner Mike Strain is urging winter weather preps for livestock and pets. He says make sure cattle has plenty of hay, feed, and water, and make sure to check water troughs as they can cover with ice. Louisiana Radio Network.
Add some power to your Christmas list this year. Right now, legendary fuel-powered steel chainsaws start at $179.95. and steel battery-powered blowers start at just $129.95. Deck your halls with power. Put a steel under your tree. Fuel or battery, find the steel power that's right for you. Search STIHL or find a dealer at steeldealers.com. All prices MSRP at participating dealers.
If your business was affected by the flood of 2016, you could be eligible for interest-free loans ranging from $10,000 to $150,000. Money that can help pay your rent, mortgage, wages, inventory, equipment, and more. Best of all, 40% of the loan will be forgiven once program requirements are met. To apply, visit restore.louisiana.gov today. That's restore.louisiana.gov.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. We are chatting with Vin Santos here at his gallery, 811 Royal Street Funeral Gallery. And aside from being an artist and running an art gallery, Vin Santos is also head instructor. We were talking about, it's a workshop. So workshop leader?
Is head that, mistress head mistress. Of the New Orleans Drag Workshop and self-professed cult leader.
Okay, fair enough. Now, how does that all fit on a business card?
You should see my business cards. They're huge.
So let me ask you this question. So we were talking about, how did you yourself get into performing drag in San Francisco before you came
know,
to New
Orleans? You know, since I was a kid, you know, I was always into music and I was forced to take piano lessons. My first recital, I was also always very different than the other kids. So I was forced to take these piano lessons by my parents, which I thought I hated. But when it came time for my first recital, I thought like to myself, I'm going to do something different. So I did a journey song instead of like a classical piece. And all the kids in my group like went wild for it. So that was my first like taste of fame. And then so going into my teenage years, I was always in a band. And then, you know, coming out in my early 20s, you know, I guess I was, you know, on the sidelines exposed a little bit to drag and drag culture. But I always thought it was kind of lame because of the lip sync. I thought, like, that's not music.
Okay, sure.
Like, that doesn't interest me, you know. And then going into my mid to late 20s, I was going through a breakup with like my, I guess what I would call my first husband. It's like an Elizabeth Taylor story. and my friend of mine invited me to Tranny Shack. I said, well, what's Tranny Shack? She said, it's a drag club. I said, well, I'm not really into that. she said, well, there's cute guys. And I said, let's go now.
Perfect. There you go.
And so I'm there, you know, and we're having drinks and the show's about to start and the show starts and the MC brings out the first artist and her name's Puccinesca. And instantly, like, AC/DC comes on over the loudspeakers, and it's and this rocking, like, badass drag queen comes out and just destroys it. And in that very moment, that very first number, I thought to myself, I could do that. And within a few months, I was kind of playing bit characters, like extras for other people's numbers.
Okay.
And a few months later, I debuted my first solo piece, and I impersonated Wendy O. Williams from the Plasmatics.
From the Plasmatics.
Including, like, you know, a tower of televisions and a sledgehammer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What I didn't realize is if when you hit a television with a sledgehammer, it explodes. And right. So there was, like, very thick, very sharp shards of glass that made it into my shoes, and I walked away with my feet bleeding. And, you know, but I got the best reaction from the audience, and I was, like, completely hooked after that first performance.
And so then you just carried on.
From there, I performed almost every week for the next probably 10 years. Within a year, I was crowned Miss Tranny Shack 2000.
Oh, congratulations.
So,
okay.
You know, which to me is one of the most important pageants to ever have happened, because it's really, again, like, it's based on performance art. It's not just a man dresses as a woman, you know, and tries to look perfect and come out and deliver a boring lip sync, you know, and make sure that every hair is in place. This is really about getting down to entertaining a, you know, an audience of 1,000 people and bringing the house down.
Now, was San Francisco at the vanguard of that type of performance, or
I think so.
That?
I mean, San Francisco and New York, and New York. You know, okay. Really, like, any of the metropolitan cities definitely had, like, a more cutting edge scene.
Okay.
Than you would probably have down here in the South. So, but this was the kind of drag I grew up on. This is what I was used to.
Sure.
You know, which is again how I went into creating this workshop, thinking, like, you know, if we're gonna do this other side of drag that's not really accepted by the traditional drag community, let's make sure that we do it well.
Now, how did Vincentos? How did that dynamic work? When you did you get pushback?
I got lots of pushback.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There were some Facebook wars.
Oh no. Okay.
You know, there's a real typical, like, coined phrase that comes from the more traditional drag community when talking about the kind of drag that myself and my people do, and they say, that's not drag. You know, anything that is not traditionally, again, the man dressing as a woman in a certain formula, to them, it's not drag. But drag has, you know, completely opened itself up to everyone over the last, you know, I want to say last couple decades, but especially the last decade, you know, with the introduction of drag being on television,
right.
It's thrown it more into, I wouldn't say the mainstream, but it's just more widely known by people.
Widely known.
And more respected by people.
Right.
You know, and everybody wants a piece of it. And so in the workshop, we accept everybody. Like I said, we have men and women, all ages, all races, trans people, like all genders, the whole spectrum. We just want people that are going to be serious and committed about the art form and give themselves 100% over to what I'm trying to teach them.
Right. Now, do you work with the participants to then... I know you, well, you all put on productions, correct?
Yeah, I put on a lot of productions. Okay. We do it in cycles. And as of now, we've completed 6 cycles. The cycles are 10 weeks each. So it's a lot of work. We can only really do it twice a year. If it paid better, I'd probably do it full time.
Right.
Because, like, there's no, it's like an endless amount of people that want to sign up for this thing. You know, it's really taken off to the point where we have to interview people ahead of time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And, you know, really find out who's serious and who's not, because the last thing you want to do is work for 3 or 4 weeks with somebody and spend a lot of time and invest a lot into them and then have them drop out or flake out.
Or flake out, sure.
You know.
Now, where do we find New Orleans these days then sitting on the spectrum with drag, as comparing it, say, to someplace like San Francisco?
Well, not that I would, you know, take full credit for completely turning the drag scene upside down here in New Orleans, but I'll just take it. You know, it's since the first cycle of the workshop, it's just exploded, you know, especially, like, out into the neighborhoods like the Bywater and the Marigny. Like, there are so many different kinds of drag performers now, and a lot of them are producing their own shows and their own parties, and the scene is just thriving, and it's incredible to watch. And now there's also been some crossover between, you know, workshop people, you know, mixing in with like the more traditional queens that work in the quarter. And everybody's making friends. Well, at least most of us are. Well, there's a couple of you out there that know who you are.
That's still not drag. That's saying
still, they still don't think we do drag.
Now,
and I tell you know what I tell them. I tell them, you know, you can think what you want, but I have a plane to catch.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I like that. Now, just and I'll let this go in a second. Was that maybe a generational thing too? Were the some of these folks older drag performers in New Orleans?
I definitely think it's a generational thing. But again, you know, where I come from, there were people from all walks of life.
Sure.
You know, enjoying and doing drag, and so I don't want to put an age bracket on it. I think it was just, you know, down here in the South, they hadn't really seen a lot of alternative drag before.
Yeah, okay.
It was not anyone's fault or anything. It just hadn't really made its way down here.
Sure.
And I hadn't moved here yet. So,
right. And that was your job. That was your role.
That was my job. It was my calling. And some, you know, a lot of people love me for it and some people hate my guts.
Oh, that's, you know, when you do stuff like
that. But our shows are packed out and, you know, anything that is workshop related is constantly sold out.
And what venues, what are a couple examples of venues?
Well, you know, the Always Lounge is our home club on St. Claude.
Sure.
That is where all the draguations happen. So at the end of this 10 weeks, after you are like whipped into shape and you have all of your act together, you have to draguate live in front of close to 200 people.
Okay.
You know, and even though the occupancy at the Always Lounge is about 130.
Just at City Hall. Come on.
And you know, it's really, these draguations have become a phenomenon. It's amazing because it's a ceremony. So it's like a graduation ceremony. So people are there. The audience is fully invested in what's going to happen. And the energy exchange between the audience and the performers is unlike anything I've ever seen before. And then once a year, starting a couple years ago, we've decided, you know what? Let's just throw our own pageant. Like, we'll never be accepted in the traditional pageant world. So let's take what we do, throw our own pageant. It's going to be bigger than the Always Lounge. It's not going to hold enough people. So we moved the pageant to One Eye Jacks.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
sure.
Where we can put comfortably 300 to 400 people.
Let's take a little break here and come back, and we're going to talk about the pageant. And we'll talk a little bit about burlesque, too, because you have some involvement in that. And we're going to talk about Mr. Gregory's there on Rampart. Go figure. You stay tuned. We'll make a connection. Come on back.
Ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Goodbye, Joe. I got to go. Me, oh, my, oh.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be, however you are listening to the NOLA Drink Show. I really appreciate it today. And if you've been listening, and you should be, and I hope you were, we are here at 811 Royal Street at Funeral Gallery. We are chatting with Vin Santos, who owns the gallery, but among many other things, as far as being an artist and a gallery owner, also headmistress of the drag workshop. And let's talk about this too. So I want to finish with the pageant thing that you were mm-hmm. talking about, Vincentos, but then you're also everyone's favorite drag grandma.
Yeah, that term of affection was kind of self-inflicted by me because ultimately I have, 60 drag children now from these six cycles of the drag workshop. And I just thought it was kind of strange when they started calling me their mother. That's a traditional thing. You learn from somebody and that becomes your drag mother. And I felt so much older than all of them. I figured, like, if you call me grandma, then I look like a really young, beautiful grandma. I don't want to look like some old washed up mother.
Which is great. When you said
so
that,
it's a way of like getting, letting my age off the hook a little bit.
I can tell you, I know you're younger than me. So
you'd be surprised.
Just by how we were talking about San Francisco and certain things, I can kind of tell. But let's talk about the pageant. So you guys are going to do that at One Eye Jacks.
Yeah, that happens in September. And it's become this incredible thing. In the pageant, okay, so for the workshop and the draguation, everybody works on the same thing. They work on one lip sync performance piece, because you have actors and you have burlesque people and you have people with all these different skills coming in. And I wanted to level the playing field. I said, so we're all going to focus on one type of performance, and that is the traditional lip sync.
Okay.
Taking the traditional lip syncing, make it totally non-traditional and over the top, and bring the house down with that. For the pageant, I open it up completely. You have 10 minutes to do whatever you want. So we have people coming in, they do stand up, they do improv, they do, circus arts, they do, dance and live singing. And, they can really just open up their character to all the possibilities that there are out there in the entertainment world.
You're finding people that are coming from backgrounds of performance from different genres.
Yeah, it's a huge cross section of people. It's people that have never stepped on a stage ever before in their life, all the way up to like theater majors, burlesque professionals, some people that have been doing drag but just want to be better. And it really helps in the workshop environment because you have people with all these backgrounds that bring something to the table that they can share with the group.
That's great.
So you have this awesome exchange of ideas. Someone's a dancer, they can help you choreograph your number.
Yeah.
Someone's in theater, they can kind of guide you on your performance and help you make it better. Someone's a makeup artist, which is our favorite. We're always accepting makeup artists.
That's great. So, I mean, the cross-fertilization concept here is wonderful. So people bringing different disciplines to the table and then sort of putting it in this gumbo pot and then seeing what you get.
You really, really never know what you're going to get. So it's constantly exciting and never gets old.
Which is great. Then as head of the workshop, head mistress.
I wanted to quit.
How much inspiration do you derive from that, walking away from this?
Going back to, myself trying to stay one lesson ahead when it comes to like high femme female drag, I created a whole new character for myself.
Okay.
Who is this like Lady Vincentos character. And she kidnapped my life completely. Like once she got in drag, got a photo shoot, got some professional pictures, the gigs were on and drag became my profession. And I was traveling and booked, 5-6 nights a week for about 2 to 3 years. It was never my intention. Drag was always just a passion and a hobby of mine. I like to work in the land of the living in the daytime. And this character completely took over because of the popularity of drag. Everybody wanted a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely wore that out. I worked on Bourbon Street for close to 2 years at this place called Lucky Pierre's.
Sure.
And it was a full-time job. Now I'm taking a step back to focus on my visual art and to teach the workshop and do stuff that's just more important to me than just running around trying to collect $100 here and there.
But that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. That's really
this
neat.
Body doesn't want to do it anymore.
Right.
Like just this year, I've gotten 2 new hips, one on the left and one on the right.
No. Okay.
And I'm out of hips at this point.
You actually told me that at Tonique. And when you're a grandmother, and you'd only have 2. And we know how lots of times at the end of some people's life, and I hate to say this, but it's like if you fall down and break a hip, that's usually the end.
Yeah. And so. My drag character likes to fling herself across the stage. And, you know, she's a stunt woman.
So let's talk a little bit, Vincentos, about your husband, Gregory, who runs Mr. Gregory. And we were talking about a little bit of a food tie-in with an event.
Sure.
Ostensibly, the show is about drinking food, but we talk about all kinds of things.
Food is my life in the sense that I married into it. Mr. Gregory's been a chef all his life. He's got his own cafe called Mr. Gregory's on Rampart Street, just across from the Armstrong Arch.
Right next to Bartonique, where we met.
And he's been doing this really fun thing. He does Mr. Gregory's Shrimp Boil on the weekends, Thursday through Sunday. And you can find a lot of these drag and burlesque performers that we talked about, you know, because it's seated family style. You never know who you're going to meet, who you're going to sit to, what celebrities are going to be there. But always in the corner, there's a performance artist, you know, usually singing or playing or both.
Okay. So this is open to anybody to show up?
It's open to anybody, yeah. Just go to mrgregorys.com and you can book a table or book a few seats.
And this is done on, I'm sorry, you said Saturdays?
It's typically Thursday through Sunday, just depending on the time of year.
Oh, and it kind of floats, so it's not going to be...
You almost always find a table on a Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah.
If you're in time, because that's another thing that sells out.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So let's tell people we got about 3 minutes left. We got some time. So what are some events coming up that we want people to be paying attention to?
If you're in New Orleans, check out the Shrimp Boil. So many people have come to it and said, that's the best meal I've had, you know, and it's the bare bones. It's like a big pot with the seasoning and shrimp and corn and sausage and some great little appetizers and some, you know, really unusual artists performing in the corner. A really exciting event that I'm involved in now is called Spectacular, and that's at Le Petit Theater, which is the oldest operating theater in New Orleans and really the only proper theater in the French Quarter
and
the only proper variety show that's even happening. There's just nothing for the tourists to go do outside of like the mess that is Bourbon Street.
Right.
So this is a true variety show hosted by myself and produced by myself and my partner, Lady Beast. And there is drag, there is burlesque, there is live music, there's dance, there's circus arts. It's really like 70 minutes of what the best of New Orleans has to offer as far as these performing artists, these, you know, mostly underground performing artists.
I think it's really neat too. And you and I were talking about this on Thanksgiving when we met at Tonique, that that space, it's a beautiful space at the mm-hmm. Dickie Brennan Restaurant Group, and they're friends of the show, has done. And I think it's great that they are putting on this type of production with you, because, you know, the place hasn't been redone and reopened for particularly long, I guess, maybe 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. So it's great to see the cultural programming. They've done some good stuff there, but it's great to see the cultural programming broaden.
Yeah, I mean, to have a proper show in the French Quarter was my dream when I moved
in
here.
There's
this huge lack of venues. I did this Bourbon Street thing. I hated it.
I mean, Lucky Pierre was a neat room. It's a neat building.
It was fine, but the stage was like a fold-out stage with school carpet on it.
Right.
And the curtains were like falling off of the back of the stage. It was a nightmare. So to be working in like this most gorgeous venue in the French Quarter is a dream come true. You know, and we just simply approached them, told them our idea. They knew our reputation as producers and performers, and they said, let's just give it a shot. So we're co-producing with them. And we have two more nights coming up this year on the 29th and 30th of December.
Great.
And you should probably get tickets for that, because that's another event that sells really quickly.
That sells out.
Yeah, okay. The room is not very big. I think it holds like 300 people.
Yeah, right, no doubt. Well, Vincentos, we have about 40 seconds left. Tell people how we can find you.
You can find me.
Where do we find you online and all that?
It's spelled Vincentos. Just get online and look it up. You'll see all kinds of things that I do, from the drag workshop to I used to be a filmmaker to all my drag stuff and my art dolls featured at Funeral Gallery.
811 Royal Street.
811 Royal Street.
All right. Excellent. Vincentos, thank you so much for taking some time out today.
I appreciate your time. Thank
Absolutely.
you.
Absolutely. I'll see you again at Tonique.
Great.
That'll happen. Friends, thanks for tuning into the Noel Drink Show. We'll be right back with more. Come on back.
Looking
looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose, Coquille Blanc. Cheers. Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey. On a bottle of whiskey. Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey. On a bottle of whiskey.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Hour number two here of the show. Thanks for tuning in today. If you're here listening on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans or in podcast land, wherever you may be, I certainly appreciate you listening to the show. Yeah, friends, on Tuesday, so I was looking forward to this. So I was going to go see The Dead and Company, which is, of course, an iteration, if you will, three remaining members of the, what were the Grateful Dead, of course, Bob Weir, the guitar player, and the two drummers, Billy Kreutzmann, whose family is from New Orleans, by the way, or some of his family. So he's been performing here for a long time after Jerry Garcia passed away and the Grateful Dead itself ceased to be. And then Mickey Hart, of course, also the fantastic percussionist and drummer, along with John Mayer, O'Teal Burbridge, and Jeff Chimenti. And unfortunately, John Mayer, who I think is, and I'll get into this, but an interesting add to the band. I was always a little skeptical, but the stuff that I've heard from them, streaming stuff and some stuff online and things, it's really good. The guy's worked really hard to become a good guitar player and really embraces the Grateful Dead canon and all of these things. I grew up, of course, as you regularly know, mentioned this for other reasons, talking about Shochu at the top of the show out in the Bay Area. So I more or less grew up seeing the Grateful Dead, saw them a ton of times when primarily started going when I was in college. So I wasn't around for the early days. I'm not that old, but I was definitely around enough to see them quite a bit. I won't tell you how many times, but quite a bit. And ever since Jerry Garcia died, I kind of, I don't want to say struggled, but you know, it's not the Grateful Dead. And I finally came to terms with the fact that, hey, these are musicians that I like and these different incarnations that they've done further and quote the Dead and now Dead and Company and Phil Lesh and friends, a bass player and different, you know, things like that, that, hey, these are musicians that I like playing songs that I like and a canon of songs, not just, if you don't know the Grateful Dead, a lot of the stuff they play is true Americana, one of the best versions of Johnny B. Goode you'd ever hear, believe it or not, Chuck Berry, of course. And yeah, so, you know, I've seen a handful of things. This would have been, I think, maybe the fifth thing that I've seen since Garcia died in 95. And I was looking forward to this. And actually, a friend of mine, over at WWOZ hooked myself and my wife up with tickets, so I was really appreciative of that. And yeah, we were going to go. It was going to be at the Smoothie King Center on Tuesday night, and then unfortunately, as John Mayer, who I was just talking about, had to have an emergency appendectomy here in town, and he seems to be recovering well from what I read. They've postponed a couple. So the show wasn't canceled, it was actually postponed. They have not announced a replacement date. If you were concerned or hearing this and maybe you had tickets, they are going to reschedule the concert, apparently, and all tickets will be honored. If you want a refund, you can go back to the point of sale and get a refund for that. But I'm going to stick around and wait for the reschedule. But yeah, so that didn't really happen. And, you know, I was kind of naive in a couple things that went on with this here, in that I couldn't believe how many people actually were in town that traveled here to see the show. There were a lot of disappointed heads, deadheads around, to be sure, that people, a lot of people, man, a ton of people that actually came to town. But I kept telling people, hey, I said, look, if there is a city in the world where you have an event like this that's postponed, not happening, you cannot ask for a better place in New Orleans for this to take place, because music is just, you know, falling from the sky around you. There's going to be people doing all kinds of interesting things and stuff. And, you know, hey, go eat, go drink, go hear great music. And I want to give a shout out to my buddy Mark Stone, the Mark Stone Band, good friend of mine for a number of years now. Mark was meant to do with his band some great players, Reggie Scanlon on bass, Dave Easley on a pedal steel guitar. He had Parody, God, I'm forgetting his first name. That's terrible. From Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Let's see who else. A couple other folks sitting in. So it was really a lot of fun. They were doing that at the Little Gem Saloon. It was supposed to be the after show for after the Dead and Company concert and go on around 11 o'clock or something. And they just moved the show up to 8 o'clock. Man, the Little Gem Saloon right there on Rampart and Poydras was packed. That was a lot of fun. They pulled off some great Grateful Dead tunes. Mark has some of that in his bag, along with the guys that he plays with and a lot of Mark's originals, some blues standards that Mark does really, really well. So that was a lot of fun. And I was telling people, go check that out. That's really cool. Now, here's one of the naive things that I forgot about. One, didn't really think about I should know this, having seen the Dead a bunch, how many people would come to town to pay us a visit, which is great here in New Orleans to check out the concert. But then also they announced that sometime in the later evening, I was here at 9:30, probably doors at 9:30, show closer to 11, was going to be a replacement jam. And, you know, some of the guys, I believe, I haven't really read about what happened, but some of the guys from the band Dead & Company were going to turn up at Howlin' Wolf and, you know, do a replacement concert. I'm sure lots of guests joined and all that good stuff. I'm thinking, hey, that's cool. And you know how New Orleans is. This information transmits from bar to bar. As a matter of fact, my good friend Anna Giordano, who's a bartender there at Bar Tonique on North Rampart, saw her earlier in the day and we were talking about it. And then she was talking to some people, some patrons later on in the day at the bar, said, heard about this replacement show at Howlin' Wolf. She texted me, said, hey, heads up. But, you know, that's cool. That's New Orleans. I really appreciated Anna doing that. I'm thinking, right on. Not that many people are going to know about it. We're going to go see my buddy Mark play at the Little Gem Saloon at 8 o'clock. Watch that for an hour, hour and a half, and, you know, wander over to Howlin' Wolf and go check that out. Yeah, that was naive thing number two. Why? Because, well, they actually put Howlin' Wolf put tickets on sale online, $35 a pop, and it sold out in a matter of minutes. A matter of minutes. And I, yeah, so I wasn't going to go over there to try and get in and see if there were tickets at the door or anything along those lines. And no, I don't swing the axe in town. So no, I did not have an inside connection over at Howlin' Wolf to get in. But as I explained to my wife, I said, this would be one of the worst opportunities to try and go, you know, get some tickets at the door or try and work something to get on in, because everybody that's there that got shut out from the concert is going to know about this. And sort of like waiting outside a Grateful Dead show, people trying to get a miracle. If you're ahead, you know what I mean, get a ticket and get on in. There were going to be probably 2,000 people outside Howlin' Wolf trying to get into that show. So, hey, we just stuck around, went to Little Gem Saloon. It was really cool. But a couple things that I'll add here before we take a break and come back with our Shochu interview with Toshio Ueno is that, you know, I was hearing a lot of the folks that were in town were younger folks. And that kind of caught me off guard a little bit too. You know, most of the people, they were of the age such that I'm sure I was seeing Grateful Dead shows with their parents. And they were referring to this as a Dead show. And this is not a Dead show. It's Dead & Company. I totally dig it. Love the musicians. As I said, all this stuff, it's great. A Dead show is a Grateful Dead show. And that those days are gone. And hey, I appreciate the experience. It's just not the same thing. And I'm not trying to be wistful, or I'm not trying to be that old guy saying, nah, 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 back in my day, that's how the Grateful Dead was. But it's a different thing, and it's not a Dead show. I'm glad that a younger generation is connected with that band. It's an important band culturally, has an interesting history here in New Orleans. And that's the last thing I'm going to talk about beyond just saying, hey, it's not a Dead show. It's Dead & Company. That's fine. But I was telling some folks, we were hanging out at Two Jags in the afternoon, there on Decatur Street in the French Quarter, and some young guys that were in town to see that. And I was telling them the story, as I was told, about the bust of the Grateful Dead in 1970, January 31st, 1970, the famous line busted down on Bourbon Street in the song Truckin' that came out a little bit later that year. They were busted for, having illicit drugs. And it's an interesting story because they were supposed to play two shows, which they actually ultimately did at the, now it was brand new at the time, the Warehouse, the Fame Club here in New Orleans. And that didn't really work out. They got busted when they got back to the hotel. The cops handcuffed them all together, lined them up, and took some publicity photos, you know, and all that. And it was in the paper. And there was this concern. This was even an article in Rolling Stone magazine right after that happened in 1970 that said the cops here in New Orleans were worried about New Orleans turning into a hate Ashbury in the South, maybe a little bit oversold. But hey, what we're going to do, I'm going to take a little break here on the show because we got some business to take care of. We're going to come back with that Shochu interview. And then I'll finish up because I have an interesting little tidbit about the Dead bust in 1970 that I was told a few years ago. So, hey, we'll do that when we close the show. Friends, come on back. Kick the door in again. I'd like to get some sleep before I travel, but if you got a warrant, I guess you're gonna come in. Busted down on Bourbon Street, set up like a bowling pin, knocked down, it gets to wear it thin, it just won't let you be.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in the podcast world, wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in today. Yes, Tales of the Cocktail 2017. Here we are, technically day four. You're hearing this sometime after. And we are back at Sylvain, our good friend's restaurant here in the French Quarter, taping for the show. And I'm pleased to be joined by my next guest, Toshio Ueno.
Yep.
From Mutual Trading Company, or Mutual Trading Incorporated, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Okay. Located in Los Angeles, California, is a headquarter. We have office in New York, Hawaii, Arizona, Vegas, Texas, Boston, and Washington, D.C.
Okay, great. Yeah. And so you guys are an importation company?
Yes, we are an importer of Japanese food and also Japanese alcohol beverage too.
Oh, yes. You do food as well. I did not know that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. We have about 3,000 food items. Oh, so fine. If you want to open up a Japanese restaurant, we have everything from non-food to food to sake to shochu to Japanese wine.
Okay, great. And that's what we're talking about today. And thanks for being here, Toshio.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we're talking about shochu today, which is a category. It's growing, correctly, in the United States.
A little by little. Well, that's what we are trying to do.
Little by little, right? And are you starting to find that? Are you getting more success with shochu with bartenders, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, at this moment, most of the shochu is consumed by more likely Japanese people, not so many American people. So we are here to introduce and promote shochu to American mainstream people. we are trying, baby, step by step, you know, right. And it's not yet, but, you know, some of the like metropolitan area, like LA and New York, bartenders start using shochu as a cocktail ingredient.
Now, and it's, you raised a couple interesting points there, Toshio, because one of the things, as I mentioned to you before we went on the air, I grew up near San Francisco, so very big Japanese population, Japanese-American population. Here in New Orleans, we don't have that big of a Japanese population. So things like shochu, Japanese food, sake, you know, the culture is very present in that part of the world, whereas we have less of it here, as I said. Does that present an interesting challenge then?
It is a big challenge, and I don't think it's so easy. We were thinking about more than 10 years or more than 20 years to, you know, get to the point as mezcal or tequila popularity. We are not there yet. You know, we are still Japanese unknown single distillation spirit, but it's unique. It's very unique because, you know, most of the spirits are distilled a few times.
Right.
The shochu is only distilled only one time by pot still. So you still have that the congener or the original characteristic of ingredients as a flavor. So as we taste later, you can taste, let's say, sweet potato we're going to be tasting right. later. You can taste and smell the baked sweet potato.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you just said that I want to make sure people understand is maybe you're familiar with sake. Shochu is a distillate. It is not fermented wine. Okay. We don't stop there.
Make it clear.
Yep.
So if you distill wine, you become brandy. If you distill sake, it becomes shochu.
Right.
Right?
Perfect. There's a good
and
example.
And if you distill beer, it becomes whiskey.
Right.
Yeah.
So there, that's a great way to put it. So yeah. Because I think sometimes people are confused, and I've seen sometimes people, they take a first sip of shochu, and they weren't quite ready for what they were tasting. A little higher in alcohol than maybe what they thought they were going to get.
Yeah. The sake is usually 14 to 16% alcohol by content, but shochu is 25, so it's pretty high. But comparing to other spirits, it's low,
right.
More palatable.
Right, and so it is something that can very easily, I mean, I've had it in a few cocktails, but I just generally prefer to taste it neat.
So it's a part of the challenge too, because with that, you know, if you're going to make it a cocktail, alcohol level for shochu is a little bit lower than usual. So that's a challenge for bartender to make that good taste cocktail, not losing that original character of the shochu itself.
Right. Now, there does seem to be a little bit of a trend these days, too, where lower alcohol, lower ABV cocktails are becoming more fashionable.
Yeah, that's why we are on the trend now. But still, though, it's very, very not like, you know, regular vodka or tequila, much, much higher alcohol contents, and you can mixed with any kind of juice and still has that tequila taste and stuff. So.
Yeah, right. So let's tell people, Toshio, where is, in general, what part of the country is shochu made?
Well, shochu is made in the southern part of Japan, Kyushu Island mainly, which is the southern tip of Japanese island. We have 6,800 few islands, but there's only four big islands, Hokkaido in the north and main island, the Honshu regions, and Kyushu is the southern tip of the island. All this shochu, main authentic shochu is from there. Yeah.
And so, as you mentioned, let's talk a little bit about production. So only distilled once. And there are, now, by definition, there are three or four base agricultural products that can be used. Is that right, or
well,
is there more?
In the regulation, you can use much more than that, 40 few. But, you know, main one is barley, sweet potato, rice, Thai rice, sugar cane, and buckwheat. Those are main ones.
Okay.
But the major one is sweet potato and barley and rice. Those are three major ones.
So you'll get a great deal of diversity, correct? Where
yes.
Some will only be one of those and some will be blends of combinations
right.
of those, correct?
And it's by region too. You know, like Kagoshima in the southern tip of the Kyushu Island is more sweet potato. If you go to north, it's more barley. And then if you go to west side of the Kyushu Island, it's rice. Base. So
okay.
By region, they have, you know, special local regional crop.
Yes.
Yeah, and grains.
So a lot of the grains are then, it's a very local product
yes.
then in many ways,
yes.
right? The produce is what you're getting
yeah.
locally and
yeah.
the distillery's there and using yeah. what's there.
Right.
Now, is it something that as far as
As we know, there are actually lots of different varieties of sweet potato, and obviously lots of different varieties of rice. Is it pretty common where there's a variation of varietals used, with say, within the rice category?
Rice is not so much, but sweet potato, you have so many different kinds. So one sweet potato is a little bit sweeter, and the other one would has much, much more flavor and complex and more earthy. And so you can have so many different types, because even though it's a single distillation, there is a atmospheric distillation and also vacuum distillation. You know, alcohol boiling point is 89.3.
Right.
That's atmospheric boiling point.
Right.
But if you vacuum under the pressure, the temperature goes lower, boiling point.
Right.
So that means you don't damage the mash so much. You don't have to burn. You don't burn the mash so much. So you get more cleaner, clear taste.
Okay.
So you know, mixing components or you know the different types of stuff when blending it, you have so many different types of the. Even though it's one sweet potato, has different types.
Right. Interesting. I never learned that part before. That's really fascinating. So tell us a little bit, Toshio, about shochu. It's been made for a very long time in Japan, correct?
It's interesting because you know distilling method was created in East Asia, right?
Right.
Yep. And they one went to west to Scotland.
Right.
And
right.
one went to Japan through the Silk Road, and it's been it was there 16th century. So it's the same time as Scotch.
Right.
So it's been about 500 to 600 years.
And it's long long ago enough. It's somewhat unclear, right, the exact origin because it's been done for so long. Is that true? As far as when it originally was called shochu, when it was first made, by who first made it.
We don't know. It's coming from China, Laos, or it's coming from Thailand. But as you can see, one of the shochu from Okinawa region, which is very south islands, has the most southern island in Japan, called Awamori. And Awamori has to be made with Thai rice.
Okay.
That's the evidence. We think that this shochu is coming from Thailand, not from China.
Okay.
Thailand, and the research found that one of the pot stills they use in Thailand is the same as the one, old one, traditional one used in Awamori. So there's the evidence that the record saying probably coming from Thailand.
Very interesting.
But this is a interesting part because land transportation takes much longer time. Back in, we didn't have trains and highways, and so it was, you know, much faster to use a ship to transport items. So it's more possible coming from Thailand to Japan than going through the Silk Road and coming over.
And all the way over.
And it's much safer too for commodities to be on the ship than on the ground.
Right. That
it's
makes
much
sense.
Harder, yeah.
And we know that people bring this with them, right? So if it was a trading that went on perhaps with Thailand, or even people that came from there that emigrated from there and brought their own method, right?
Exactly. So Okinawan people doesn't look like me.
Okay.
More like Polynesian face.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm like more like, looks like Chinese, Korean, Japanese face, Mongolian face. But for the Okinawan people, looks like Filipinos
Which
and
Thai. Southeast Thai. Asian.
Yeah.
Well, Toshio, let's do this. We're going to take a quick break here on the show, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit more about shochu, taste a couple of the nice bottles that you brought. So, friends, hey, come on back to the Nola Drink Show.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our six-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning into the show today. We are chatting with Toshio Ueno, who is from Mutual Trading Incorporated, an importer that brings in all kinds of Japanese products, but we're talking about shochu today. And when we just took a little break, Toshio, you were just telling us about the health benefits of drinking shochu. So this is another good point. Let's bring this up.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm 53 years old, getting old, you know. I have high cholesterol and I have pressure, but there is a special enzyme called urokinase, which is an enzyme will melt down your blood clot in your veins. So if you have a high cholesterol or high blood pressure, I will recommend you to drink shochu instead of other drinks.
I'm going
to
take that medical advice.
And, you know, that it's been proven by a doctor in Japan.
Yeah. That's another thing that I've learned. See, so drink more shochu.
Yes, drink more shochu. Yeah.
It's good for everybody. We were talking a little bit about some of the different grains that you can use where in Japan that it was grown, a bit about the history. It is a very, you're talking about different production methods and then different grains, different blends. Another thing that we want people to understand, I think, is how diverse the flavor profiles are from one producer to another, one bottle to another. It's a very diverse category.
It is. So let's talk about, you know, one ingredient like rice. Even though rice, if you do atmospheric traditional way of making it, you have a more complexity, more grain, nuttier, and some vegetable like mushrooms and more complex, more body. But if you do in vacuum distillation, you get fruity, floral, and texture is much lighter, and the body is lighter, and much cleaner.
Right.
So, you know, that itself makes it different types. And then you have different making of the mash, you know, what kind of mash you, a mash fermentation can be in a different temperature. So by the maker, by maker, even in one maker can make different types of rice shochu.
So we'll have a situation where same set of ingredients, but the process then is...
There's one maker here today at the TOC. One maker is making fruity light one with vacuum and traditional type of more complex and deep flavor ones. And then she has one more with aged one.
Okay.
Aged in oak, so it has more vanillas and,
more
browner, darker notes. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, let's taste the first one here.
Okay, so we are tasting Bali.
Thank you.
And this is from a Takara company called Yokaichi Shochu. So it's made from barley. So you have a little bit of toasty barley aroma, and then on the palate, it's much more lighter and fruitier and more acidic too.
Yeah. So you just said, sorry, we kind of lost sound there for a second. So a little bit fruitier, a little bit more acidic. It's very very clean.
Yeah.
Right.
On the nose, you know, it's more toasty, but on the palate, it's more cleaner and more fruitier.
Now, Toshio, are a lot of the producers of shochu, is this still very a family-oriented type business? A lot of families own the distilleries?
Yeah, it is indeed.
And you're must be a challenge to work with sometimes.
Most of them are family-owned. And one company, I don't want to say which company because they might be listening to this, but, you know, they have, you know, family number one, family number two, family number three, and, you know, and this is that he's from number one family, number two family, and they're all in the company. It's sometimes it complicate things.
It can be complicated. We'll leave it at that. It's all family run. There's good parts that come with the family run stuff, and then there's bad parts that come with the family run stuff.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I find this one very very nice. I do get some nice floral notes. I almost get a banana note on this. Yeah, which is very good, very enjoyable. Well, what about the next one?
Next one is. Sweet potato.
Okay. Is that this one?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
And this one is 100% sweet potato. When you make a sweet potato, the first mash is usually rice. But this one is, the first mash is also sweet potato. So 100% sweet potato shochu. So you can smell baked sweet potato.
Absolutely.
Caramelized sugar, caramelized sweet potato, and some of that fruity note, like dry apricot.
Yep.
And
there's sort of an earthier note to this one as well. Yeah, I really like that. And I mean, and
the sweetness too.
And definitely, especially on the finish, the sweetness hangs through a little bit. It's and again, this is to our point too. The level of diversity within the shochu world is a point that I still want to make sure that we're very very clear on. These two things obviously share some similarities, but they are very 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 different.
Yep. Yeah, people say, you know, shochu and soju or whatever, they think it's the same thing. It's totally different. Ingredients are different. And I just want to make one thing clear. Korean soju and Japanese shochu is a little bit different.
Yes.
A big difference. I mean, actually big.
Yeah.
Because Korean soju is multiple distillation. And Japanese shochu, honkaku shochu, authentic shochu is single distillation. So there, we are more trying to keep the congener, original flavor characteristic of ingredient. They're trying to try to take that off.
Okay.
And make it more cleaner taste.
Okay. Yeah, and so often too, I noticed in times past when I lived in Korea with soju, what was so popular were the flavored sojus, very sweet.
Most of them are flavored with sweetener and also some amino acid is in it, so it's more palatable. But we don't in Japan, we don't add anything. It's just a straight distillate.
Great. So we have about a minute and a half left here, Toshio. As far as the category of shochu, we talked a little bit at the beginning about this. Are we seeing more growth? Are you positive where the category is going?
Yes. The reason why is this flavor. Even though this is a distilled spirit, I think this is more similar to wine because you have the flavor of ingredients more than any other spirits. And it's amazing how much let's say this sweet potato still remains in the liquid. And it's a similar one, it would be tequila. You know, tequila, even though it's a distill, you can taste the agave still.
You can taste the agave.
This one's the same thing. And, you know, if you, I don't want to put down other spirits, but this is different.
Terroir, and we talk about this with certain categories of spirits, like you said, with agave, so tequila, mezcal, pisco being another good example. The terroir is a huge component of this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think sometimes people also miss the mark where they think, oh, well, you know, a liquor is a liquor, like a hard liquor is a hard liquor, and it doesn't really matter where the ingredients come from and these sorts of things. I can still make it taste the same. And in this category, it's very terroir driven.
I know, and also, you know, shochu, you have to use koji. Koji is a Japanese microbe or fungi, and otherwise
also used in sake, right?
Yeah, also used in sake. Sake koji is yellow koji, but for shochu, is used black koji and white koji, which produce more acidic mash.
Okay.
So you can protect the mash from the bacterial infection. So that's the reason why, you know, it's southern regions. It's much warmer, humid.
Right.
But it can survive.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a really key component of making sake and shochu is koji.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, really quickly, where can people find information online about what you guys have?
www.lamtc.com or my sake school. I also run Sake School of America. So you go www.sakeschoolofamerica.com.
Okay, great. And we'll have you on again, Toshi, and let's talk about sake next time.
Yeah. Okay, we should next time.
Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Friends, we were just chatting with Toshi Ueno from Mutual Trading Incorporated. We're talking about shochu, a very interesting category. Go try some yourself for sure. Absolutely. Hey, come on back to the Noel Drink Show. Shoshone Nation, wild creation, we don't bow down on nobody's ground. But we love to hear them call us Indian Ring, the golden eagle, wild magnolia, the little red, white, and blue, the pretty monogram hunters, and we don't bow down on nobody's ground. But we love to hear them call us Indian Ring, and here comes the spy.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, when the saints go marching in. I want to be in that number. When the saints go marching in. Oh, when the sun refuses to shine. Oh, when the sun refuses to shine. I still want to be in that number. When the sun refuses to shine. Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, when the saints go marching in.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. I hope you enjoyed that interview talking about shochu with Toshio Ueno. A really interesting guy, nice guy. I'd like to have him back on, talk a little bit more about sake in the future. As we noted, that'll be pretty cool. But shochu, check it out. It's a really interesting thing. And I didn't mention this, so one of the reasons why it kind of struck my fancy was having cocktail yesterday at Sylvain, where I hang out a lot. You hear me talk about that place a lot, right there on Chartist, right by the cathedral, Jackson Square, kind of near the corner, right a couple doors down from Tableau. Great spot, LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, and good spot. Anyway, they have a drink on the menu that's a take on a Mai Tai, and I forget exactly what else was in it. I think there was a pear liqueur going on and some things, which plays really nice. So a variation on a Mai Tai, but using shochu as the alcohol base ingredient in that, and then some different modifiers. And it tasted very tropical, but it was kind of a little bit wintry, if you will, just a really nice thing. And so shochu is really, I think, a versatile thing. A lot of the cocktails that you see originally, if you go do, say, a net search, and some of these things being that it's very prevalent in Japan, of course, where it's made, a lot of it goes really well with like tea cocktails with tea. So you can infuse the shochu with tea and that sort of thing. But then it's a lot of stuff like that, which is really nice. And some warm drinks actually works pretty well with that. But we're starting to see it kind of get in the hands of craft cocktail bartenders in other parts of the world and doing very interesting things with it that aren't quite so maybe Japanese in a traditional sense anyway, or what we might expect in that situation, I should say. And so some pretty cool stuff there. I hope you found it. Go. The only place that there's like you start to see more of it. So Sylvain, I know, has a couple different ones that are going on. If you're looking to actually pick up a bottle or two, I'm sure some of your favorite bottle shops can order it for you. I know the Martin Wine Cellar carries the Mizu Shochu, which is a nice one. It's a good one. There's also the Hong Kong Market over in Gretna. Across the lake, of course, in the West Bank, has probably the best selection that I've seen in town. If you're looking to pick it up retail somewhere, they have several. So if you want to sample the barley ones and the rice ones and the sweet potato ones and blended ones and all that, and most of them, they're not too expensive. So yeah, check that out. Friends, one other football note I wanted to mention. We're talking about the Saints, of course, big game this evening if you're listening on the radio. Another good development here locally that we're all concerned with for the most part. Most of us, I guess. Me by wedding, by marriage, I have to be concerned because my wife is an alma mater there. Her alma mater is LSU, an alumni. And LSU Tigers ended up, you know, turning things around in the season. They got themselves the Citrus Bowl against Notre Dame, which I think is a pretty good matchup, actually. It'll be an interesting one to watch. Notre Dame, pretty good program this year. I was a little disappointed. I think where LSU ended up about 17. I thought they might kind of crack the top 15, get around 11 or 12. But hey, Citrus Bowl going on at noon, I believe, give or take. Might be 11 our time. New Year's Day Bowl, can't go wrong with that, huh? So could have been a lot worse for a 3-loss team. That loss to Troy really hurt. Friends was talking a little bit about, wanting to finish that story about the Dead and Company thing. And I mentioned I was in two Jags, and I was talking to some young guys who had come to town, also the young bartender, my friend Rachel, in there, and I was talking about the bust that happened, and circling back on that briefly, so the line in the famous song Truckin' that came out on the American Beauty album a little later in 1970, bust took place on January 31st, 1970, after they played the first of two gigs at the famed club that is no longer here, of course, The Warehouse. A lot of you out there remember that place, and they actually did play both shows, by the way. They did, you know, they got arrested after the first one when they got back to the hotel. They were kind of tipped off that some of this was coming. And they did play the second one. Interestingly enough, and in the second one, they sort of passed a bucket and used some of the proceeds to pay for legal funds, because not only were the band members arrested, with the exception of the two keyboard players who actually eschewed drugs of any sort, and they basically were, you know, not taken in, but a whole bunch of the crew and a bunch of the people that some folks that were here from that were in New Orleans that went back to the hotel with the band were also arrested. And here's the interesting part. So they passed the bucket. Actually, let me finish that thought. They passed the bucket to help with some of the fees to basically spring the crew on bail to get them out of jail. Most of the charges were eventually dropped. But here's an interesting thing. I was actually up on Frenchman Street. This has got to be, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago, and was watching some music and was sitting next to a guy, as we do here in New Orleans, start talking to a guy, older gentleman, and he was a retired cop. And funny guy, and we had this chat, and I don't even know how this came up in conversation, but he was not one of the guys that actually... He was a part of the arrest situation, but as he described it, he wasn't one of the guys that went in and busted up the hotel room. He had some funny stories about that, some of which I probably really can't say on the air, but was, you know, involved outside or something along those lines and was a firsthand witness. And as I mentioned, the New Orleans police, they were concerned about, and some of the authorities here in town, that, you know, this would turn into a Haight Ashbury of the South. Now, maybe there's a little bit of an irony. We sort of have that reputation, right, especially in certain parts of town where anything goes. But these were the days when LSD was kind of an unknown and all of that. And so one of the guys, and this is the sort of the inside scoop, you know, everybody thought they were out to sort of bust the band. The guy, his name is Owsley Stanley, who's passed away a long time ago. He was listed as, quote unquote, a technician for the band. He was essentially their sound guy, but he also made LSD. And he was one of these first guys to really make, produce LSD and distribute it in San Francisco, all the acid tests and these sorts of things. He was involved in that. And as he explained to me, he said the cops really weren't interested in the band. They were interested in this guy. And it was sort of this mysterious kind of thing coming from San Francisco, I guess, and stuff. And Timothy Leary, we all know that story, probably, if not, Google it. And yeah, so that's who they were really interested in. They did bust him. They charged him with several things. I believe most of those charges were also dropped. I think they probably really found there was not a whole lot there. It's not really like a lot of organized crime going on or something like that. We're not talking about drug cartels and this sort of thing. But that was kind of, I thought, an interesting little nugget that the band almost, it was happenstance because they were looking for this guy. And he was part of the posse there, part of the entourage. So interesting story on that front, friends. Want to mention a couple, I ran out of time on some events. We talked about LunaFet starting tonight now after they postponed from last night, and then they have extended it through Sunday, Lafayette Square, 6 to 10 p.m. Lots of cool art installations that I didn't mention as well. So some really great stuff. Go check it out. It's worth, you know, an hour strolling around, catching the 10, 15-minute presentation, and then wandering around. Christmas boat parade's going on this Saturday, 4 to 8 p.m., 8001 Lakeshore Drive right there, you know, lakefront here in New Orleans. I think you can pretty much see it just about for a wide range of lakefront. It glides down the New Basin Canal right into Lake Pontchartrain. There's going to be raffle music from local choirs, pictures with Santa, food and drinks, holiday cocktails, craft beer, book readings, all kinds of stuff. That's put on by Save Our Lake, a great organization. So go check out saveourlake.org/lights for more information. Go and enjoy a little bit of that. People really do a great job decorating their boats. That is a lot of fun, and it's for, you know, a great organization that's really done a lot for the environment of Lake Pontchartrain, the water quality and other considerations there. Christmas in the Park is open through December 31st at Lafreniere Park in Metairie. Sundays through Thursdays from dusk to 9:45 p.m. and Friday and Saturday from dusk to 11:45 p.m. The admission is $5. Nice decorations, really pretty going on out there. Done a great job this year. Celebration in the Oaks at City Park is going on. Of course, City Park here in New Orleans. It's open through January 1st. They are closed Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. Admission is $9 with extra fees for the rides and the carousel gardens and things they have going on there. Children under 3 are free. That's always really fun because they do a good job decorating out there. If you haven't had a chance to make it over to the Roosevelt Hotel, they always do a wonderful job. I didn't get to go to see the lighting of the decorations, but wandered in there finally yesterday. Check it out. Beautiful as always, as they do. They're really neat. So go get yourself a Sazerac in the historic Sazerac bar at the Roosevelt and enjoy those nice decorations. A lot of good stuff going on. We'll be at Pontchartrain Vineyards, as we always are, for the event on Saturday. That should be a lot of fun. A programming note, friends, coming up next week, we're going to do something kind of special. We are going to be doing a joint show with my good pal, Tim McNally, of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, who holds down this time slot Mondays through Wednesday and Fridays from 3 to 5 p.m. And we're going to be over at Cafe Adelaide, the Swizzle Stick Bar over there at the Lowe's Hotel. And they do their yappy hour. Yeah, and it's kind of funny. So they raise awareness about pets and animals and bringing your puppies and all that. It's going to be a lot of fun. But they do a great job with the happy hour. So we're actually going to do a joint live broadcast. We'll have some other guests on and some things and join different stuff in the hospitality over there at the Swizzle Stick Bar. But we're going to do that joint show together, which Tim and I usually do once or twice a year for one reason or another. And that's going to be a good laugh. So that'll be a live broadcast from the Swizzle Stick Bar. You can stop by and see us. We'll be there from 3 to 5. That'll be a lot of fun at the Lowe's. And yeah, don't miss us there. And we'll be back with another show. We got some stuff come up. We're going to be talking and scheduling some stuff. Michael Nisley of Bubblio Tech talking about some sparkling wine, stuff like that for the holidays, and some other good programming coming up here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends, for you in the near future. Thanks again for listening today. Stay warm, stay dry, be kind to one another, use your turn signal. Happy holidays. And until then, cheers, y'all.